Suburban Farm Yarns with Monica Main.
It's time for our weekly Suburban Farm Yarn with actor, activist and green thumb storyteller Monica Main. Today, Mon and I will be discussing the weather. Good morning, Mon. What can you tell us about the weather today?
I'm just going to blow your mind. I've been blowing my own mind. Okay, so you would have heard the term recently bandied about. We are now in the Anthropocene period on the planet, which is basically where humans have become the single most influential species on the planet. Influential sounds like, you know, we're legends, but we're not really. Because, okay, so the term weather has been around for hundreds of years, you know, wather, weather. There's all different, you know, Germanic, English, Old English. Everyone's referred, you know, it's about the wind, the rain, precipitation, etc. But now, of course, we're a bit more specific. We've got terms like climate change and global warming. And, of course, climate change has always been happening, and that's the weather. But global warming is pretty much, I've got to say, it's our fault. And so things like at the moment, you know, we've got this amazing rain bomb over Queensland and New South Wales, which is caused by a low. It's part of we've talked about this before, the La Nina. So warm air currents are making the ocean heat up. The ocean heats up and water causes precipitation and more rain occurs. So this low over Queensland and New South Wales is sucking warm air and wet warm air in from the China Sea, and it's been sort of trapped there, can't move down and into the Tasman because there's a high in New Zealand. Anyway, so this is crazy intense weather pattern which is causing all these awful floods. And you can go, oh well, you know, it's been raining on the planet for years and years. But let me just go through a little interesting process about what the hell is global warming. Now, you would have heard about greenhouses. We use them in gardening, don't we? And so people, the idea of a greenhouse is you've got glass and sunlight comes in and plants photosynthesize and they produce heat, and the heat gets trapped by the glass and reflected back into the plants, and sort of that's what a greenhouse is. And so this term greenhouse effect was sort of bandied about. But in fact, it's a little bit more, it's more interesting than just somehow sort of heat getting trapped in, because it's about how the heat gets trapped in. So the earth is a big lump of dirt, for want of a better word, just hanging around in space. So the earth's got mass, and the earth's gravity comes from its mass. So say if the earth was smaller, we wouldn't have the same mass, and therefore we wouldn't have as much gravity. And see, the gravity is what holds our atmosphere in, and the atmosphere is important because it's, you know, it's full of oxygen, which we need. It's full of many gases, actually, and the main gases are oxygen and nitrogen. And so, okay, so we've got oxygen and nitrogen and other gases that are stuck to the Earth. I mean, the layers of atmosphere probably go for, oh, I don't know, up to 600 kilometres, and that's held around the Earth by gravity. Super important. Otherwise, it'd just be floating off into space. Even though, interestingly enough, gravity is one of the weakest, well, is the weakest force in the universe, they say, but it's still strong enough to hold our atmosphere on. Okay, so stick with me. Then you've got the sun, fabulous sun, sending out the light and heat. And so with the sunlight comes the heat. There's basically solar radiation, and it takes, well, sunlight takes about 8 minutes to get to the Earth, a bit over 8 minutes, actually 8 minutes, 20 seconds. So you've got solar radiation coming to the Earth, and that's basically full of electromagnetic radiation and light, ultraviolet light, radio waves, X-rays, gamma rays, and infrared waves. Okay, so infrared light from the sun hits the Earth, and it creates about 49% of the Earth heating up is from infrared. So stick with me. Infrared waves hitting the Earth, and then that heats up the Earth, and that creates a thermal heat. So that thermal heat from the Earth is infrared radiation. Okay, so there's heat coming in from sunlight, and then the Earth warming up, heating up. Okay, now the interesting thing is, so back to oxygen and nitrogen, they're in the Earth's atmosphere. they're transparent to incoming solar radiation, and they're also transparent to outgoing infrared radiation. So the heat coming back off the Earth goes just, that just passes through oxygen and nitrogen. Yay, what legends. But there are other gases in the Earth's atmosphere that absorb infrared radiation. And these gases are known as greenhouse gases. So they absorb the infrared radiation. And this is where we get the heating up, the greenhouse effect. So there's water. H2O sounds really benign. That's the most common. That's water vapor. So that's the strongest greenhouse gas. So air gets warmer. It holds more water. The water vapor condenses and condenses, gets heavy, forms rain. You know, rain bomb over Queensland, rain bomb over New South Wales. And we've also got carbon dioxide. Now, carbon dioxide's great. You know, plants need it to photosynthesize. They breathe it in, so to speak, and they breathe out oxygen. We breathe in oxygen with respiration. We breathe out CO2. There's organic matter decomposing, releasing carbon dioxide. But there's also burning of fossil fuels. And that's what's... So the Anthropocene, humans, causing change in climate change, is because we've been burning fossil fuels for a few hundred years. And so to say that it's, you know, been happening naturally, yeah, sure, matter's been decomposing, releasing CO2, but we've really sped it up. And so there's also methane. That's another gas. Now, methane is 30 times stronger than CO2 at absorbing infrared radiation. So there's more methane in the atmosphere, there's more heat. So interestingly enough, everyone's worried about the Siberian permafrost melting, not just because of melting ice raising sea levels, but in that permafrost is methane. And so you release that methane into the atmosphere. That's like a ticking time bomb, isn't it? Because that methane is going to go into the atmosphere and help heat up the atmosphere. And then to a lesser degree, you know, you've got fluorocarbons, the CFCs, but they've been banned now. But they are even more, they even, you know, hold the equivalent of like 10,000 molecules of CO2 in one molecule of CFC. So, but the main big ones are the CO2 and methane, right? And so climate change, yes, has always been happening, but because we're creating more greenhouse gases which hold heat, so burning fossil fuels, agriculture, steel making, cement making, deforestation, they're all contributing to these greenhouse gases. And so then the oceans heat up, there's more evaporation, there's more H2O, water vapour, that heats up, more rain forms, then you get more extreme weather situations like La Nina, which is happening at the moment. So we're boiling in Perth, but they're getting mega, mega flooded over New South Wales and Queensland. And I just, interestingly enough, CO2, they talk about, well, you know, who discovered that these greenhouse gases like CO2 hold heat? And once again, you've got, you know, male scientists like John Tyndall. He was an Irish physicist, and in 1859 he said, I believe CO2 can heat up and hold heat and therefore is a greenhouse gas. But you might have heard the expression, behind every famous man stands a very surprised woman. And I would like to say that Eunice Foote, who was an amateur scientist in America in the 1850s, she did some experiments with CO2 and thermometers, and she heated up the CO2 in some glass vessels and realised the CO2 can hold that heat. So those, the CO2 and water vapour in these glass vessels just held the heat. And so she realised CO2 had this amazing capacity for holding heat. So I would just like to honour Eunice Foote today. Yeah, so that's a big arc, but it's an interesting one because people need to know that those greenhouse gases are always in the Earth's atmosphere, and just by the nature of gravity holding our atmosphere to the Earth, we're a bit of a closed system. So that's why the term natural gas, I hate the term natural gas, because natural gas is basically methane, And as I mentioned before, methane is 30% more powerful than CO2. So even though burning natural gas doesn't release as many, it's not as polluting as, it's like they say it's, you know, 30 to 60% less polluting than, say, burning coal, it still releases carbon, it still releases CO2 when you burn it. So, yes, it, you know, American Indians discovered that, you know, there's these invisible gases came out of lakes and you could set it on fire. This is like in the 1600s. And then the French explorers or invaders realised, oh, you know, there's this gas. And then, you know, some guy in the 1800s realised, oh, well, I can, you know, mine that. I can, you know, get it out of the ground and burn it. It's still not a great clean fuel that certain people claim it to be. I mean, solar is clean. So anyway, yeah, there's this big push to sort of, oh, natural gas, let's use natural gas as a bridging power source between from coal. But, you know, just be aware, peoples, it's methane.
The topic of methane as well, it got me thinking about our meat industry and how much cows produce methane. We've mentioned cows a couple of times and how sort of the mass production of cows and how much methane they produce is contributing to that methane on planet Earth,
It is contributing. Mm-hmm. But one of the biggest contributor of carbon dioxide, methane pollutants is industry. That's why, agriculture, sure. But, you know, demolishing houses creates, you know, a climate effect as well. So deforestation, that's really bad because you really want trees hold carbon, plants hold carbon. That's why even a lawn holds carbon. If you can plant a tree, peoples, because that's going to be absorbing carbons and releasing oxygen. So, I think every individual can, you know, do what they can, but it's big industry industries that, you know, persist in wanting to extract those coal or methane in the form of natural gas from the earth that are the big proponents of the big pollutants that create this greenhouse effect. So I don't want to upset everyone, but it's deeply fascinating. You know, I think it's good to know how it all works because knowledge is power. Isn't it, Maddie?
100%, Mon. I've learnt lots. I mean, I'm someone who wasn't that strong in science, but listening to you sort of explain how it all works and kind of what gases are in Earth and how it sort of works with oxygen and carbon dioxide and how sort of our trees, which are very important, as you were saying, how they kind of do the opposite of us. They inhale, they take in carbon dioxide and release the oxygen, which is so important. We need to make sure we save our trees and take care of our plants and things like that.
Absolutely. And just on a back to just the climate and everything, I had a question about mosquitoes because we talked about mozzies last week and we know that, you know, it's the lady mozzies who are the biters because they need blood, because they need those proteins and ions to produce the eggs.
Yes.
And so, you know, I've been asked, where do mozzies go in winter? And well, I mean, in Australia, pretty much mozzies can survive. They can go into a sort of a suspended development. It's called diapause, where they just kind of lie low, so to speak, and hide out until the weather warms up and it's more conducive to them buzzing around. But, you know, we all know we've been bitten by mozzies in winter. But interestingly enough, mosquito eggs can be laid around wetlands which are dry. They can remain dormant for months until they have the right conditions. So when they're exposed to the right conditions, i.e. rainfall, then the eggs stop being dormant and can get wet and hatch. And then, of course, you know, then there's hundreds of mozzies. And interestingly enough, in places like America where you get freezing temperatures, those eggs can remain in stasis for years, like 10, 15 years. So mosquito eggs, Yeah, like insects are amazing. I mean, like flea eggs can remain dormant until there's a mammal around which they can feed on and suck the blood off. And we talked about worm eggs, worm in worm castings can remain dormant for years and years as well. They've got a hard shell, and inside every worm egg is the potential for hundreds of worms to hatch out because of that hard shell protects. And until it becomes in contact with moisture, it's the moisture that kind of ends up going, yoo-hoo, you know, you can hatch out now. And it's the same with mozzie eggs, which can stay dormant for months and months. Until they've got the right conditions, then they hatch out. So, yeah.
It's giving me the heebie-jeebies, Mon. The fact that you were saying mosquito eggs in America, you were saying where it gets to freezing cold temperatures, can last for up to 10 to 15 years. I had no idea.
It's mental. And then here in Australia, they can remain dormant for, you know, months and months and months. If there's a drought, they'll just kind of go, we'll just stay here, thanks, in the dry earth. And then as soon as it rains, it's like, woohoo, time to wake up, peoples. Yeah, and we know that female mozzies can live for months and months if there's enough food around. So it's the guys who don't last long, sucked in. but the females, yep, they can hang on to their eggs. And, yeah, anyway, so that's why we've always got mozzies around, basically, and why they're so... I mean, we've got mozzies that are native to Australia, but there's introduced mosquitoes as well. They're very, very successful. And, of course, climate change is helping those mozzies because there's, you know, more and more areas where they can survive because there's more moisture. It's like the wet's getting wetter and the dry's getting drier. So, yeah, good old humans. Changing the way the atmosphere is working on our planet.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the weather, Mon, I've noticed as soon as it hit the 1st of March, we had a little bit of drizzle and it's been a little bit colder. It's funny how that works. And I believe that it's so weird. We are in the Bunuru season, if you're looking at the Noongar calendar, which is from February to March. And I did a little bit of research. So it's the hottest time of the year with little to no rain, even though we are experiencing a little bit at the moment. Hot easterly winds continue with a cooling sea breeze most afternoons if you're close to the coast. Therefore, traditionally, this was and still is a great time for living and fishing by the coast, as it says, rivers and estuaries. Because of this, freshwater foods and seafood made up major parts of the diet during this time of year. And Bunuru is also a time of the white flowers with lots of white flowering gums in full bloom, including Jarra, Marri and Ghost gums as well.
Yeah. You would have seen the Jarra and the Marri. They've got the gorgeous white flowers. They've gone bonkers this year because we had such a wet winter.
Yeah, we did. It's an interesting time. It's so crazy how I literally woke up on the 1st of March and I was like, it's raining. I get that we're kind of getting into that cooler weather, but so sudden, and literally it went from summer, you know, we had our 30 to 40 degree days. It was super, super hot. And now it's just, you know, coming into winter time almost, but not quite yet.
No, just calm down.
No, you're gonna be don't jump the gun.
Often in March we can go, oh no, autumn's here, and then you can get some insane days of heat. And autumn, incidentally, in Perth is warmer than spring. So we have a much warmer average temperature in our autumn period than in spring. So March, April is warmer than, say, September, October in Perth. That's just a fact. You know, it's coming out of winter, the cooler sticks around, whereas coming out of summer, the warmth sort of sticks around, really. Yeah.
There you go. And also, if you are on the coast, as I said before, during winter, it's funny how this works as well, but the water is warmer as opposed to when some of the water is cooler. It's just how it works. If you went to go to the beach, say around this time, the water would be a little bit warmer than it was in summer as the land is cooler and then the water gets warmer. And then if it's during summer, it's the opposite. If the land is hot, the water is cool. So it has that binary effect, which is super interesting as well.
Yeah, which can be nice. Or also not so great if you're in Queensland or New South Wales. Yeah, a rain bomb. Which brings the whole, you know, like we talk about the Bureau of Meteorology, the bomb, but that's a different sort of bomb over there. It's one with a B, not so great. Yeah.
Not so great at all. Yeah, we've chatted about heaps today, Mon. We touched on a lot about climate change. We talked about the weather. Talked a little bit about mozzies, got back on that conversation, which we got a lot of love from last week, heaps of questions. But as again, thank you so much for joining us. I've learnt heaps and I'm sure our listeners have as well. It's been
no
a pleasure,
worries.
Mon.
Enjoy the weather, everyone.
That was actor, activist and Green Thumb storyteller Monica Main chatting with us all about the weather, climate change, seasonal changes and a little bit about mozzies. Monica will be back with us again next Thursday for another edition of Suburban Farm Yarns.